I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Let's party like it's 1999, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble Preview Show, sponsored by Betfair. West Ham won at Arsenal and Sheffield United are off to the Etihad. It's Friday 29th of December. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Eddie Brassel.
Oh, we may be in the Christmas perineum, but it's still Friday and it still bangs, Jim Campbell.
It does. It's one of the best Fridays you're going to get, because in a way every day is Friday and Saturday and who knows what day it is. So,
my giddy aunt. Jim, you were the one, for my money, that came up with the name Christmas perineum.
I doubt that's true, but I'm happy that you and a few people seem to think that I've coined that phrase. I saw the sort of incomparable Susie Dent refer to it as the Merineum the other day, which I think that's going to take some topping.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, we're all very merry in this part of the year. Looking forward to the new year, of course. Before we talk about what happened last night and then look ahead to the weekend's action, our Toshiba competition starts today, everybody. We are giving you the chance to win a brand new 50-inch Toshiba Fire QLED TV. And we're giving away three of the buggers, everybody. Not just one, three. Three different winners. You can't have like a one on each wall in your living room. That would be naughty. To enter, listen to the very end of the show after the adverts, where Pete Donaldson will be on hand to tell you how to enter. We'll be announcing the winner of our first TV on Tuesday's show and then starting another draw for TV number two that very same day. So stay tuned. And yes, you did hear right, Tuesday's show, of course, next week due to the calendar and all that. So yeah, marvellous stuff. Wait till Pete beckons you in to the games room and gives you a chance to win the TV after the show. My goodness, Jim, it's Christmas every day at the Ramble. It wasn't Christmas, though, at the Emirates last night for Arsenal fans. They lost 2-0 to West Ham, Jim.
Yeah, very, very frustrating from an Arsenal perspective. From what I could hear among the burps and the grunts from the away end, I think they were happy. but it was an absolutely brilliant, note-perfect defensive display from West Ham. I've rarely seen teams defend as well as that at the Emirates, even in the bad old days. It was just so perfectly executed. And they didn't put a foot wrong in terms of that. Now, Arsenal had, I think it was 77 touches in the box. That's the most in a Premier League game without the attacking team scoring ever.
That's right.
Yeah. And I'm not surprised by that, having watched the game, because Arsenal spent a lot of time in West Ham's box, and West Ham were very, very comfortable with that situation. They just completely packed it, just shut down every sort of passing lane, it was very, very difficult for Arsenal to get shots of any sort of meaningful quality off. But I think they had 30, but very few of them actually, you know, as I say, were of high quality. Most of them were straight at the goalkeeper because there was so much pressure on the attacking player each time. I think there's a couple of things at play. I think there are some key players for Arsenal that are underperforming at the moment. I would say Martin Odegaard was the only attacking player that really played to his best standard. So that was a contributing factor. And the first goal was calamitous. The second goal was just excellent attacking play from one of our former players. Which is just, it's the sort of thing where people say, oh, you couldn't write it. It's like, you could write it, but it would be a sort of Guy Ritchie style, script by the end of it.
With that non-celebration, he was very much the Arsenal's version of Scott Sinclair, wasn't he?
Oh, that's the worst one. Scott Sinclair is the worst one when he was he on, he wasn't on loan to Swansea. Swansea signed him permanently from Chelsea. Right. He barely kicked a first team ball for Chelsea. Scores against them. He didn't do a non-celebration. He apologised, and it's like, come on.
But that was Mavropanos, wasn't it? He was Cristiano Ronaldo scoring away at Sporting.
He didn't apologise though.
That's what he was.
Actually, sorry. Yes, Ronaldo's the worst one for doing
as
that.
As is so
enough.
Often the case.
Well, I mean, he has to be the most outstanding example, doesn't he?
He's the most dislikable one. That's what you mean, isn't it? Because he made his club a fortune and he won a title there. So it's slightly different to Mavropanos and Scott Sinclair. But Mavropanos watchers over the last couple of years will have looked at him.
Where are you?
And thought, defensively, okay, I got my questions, but he's a really good finisher for a defender. And he proved it all over again. He scored some absolute bangers from Stuttgart. And West Ham fans have got that to look forward to later down the line, a few like blockbusters from outside the penalty box. And with the players they're going to lose in January, they might need a few of those, right?
And is he the new Philippe Albert for the Premier League?
Oh, yes, I like that. I like that. I was thinking Alex from Chelsea, but you know, same.
You're basing it on that one absolute raspberry scored at Stamford Bridge in the top corner.
Yeah, I'm basing it entirely on that. Yeah,
if you're basing it entirely on that, Andy, I'm with you. I'm with you on this funny little train. It's a great win for West Ham. A great win for David Moyes, though, Andy. We know he's tried and tried to win away at the big clubs. And he's finally done it. I mean, in terms of the Emirates just itself, Andy, 22 visits he hadn't won there. But, I mean, it's a much wider stat, if you like. That doesn't really make sense, but go with me. It's a much wider picture with Moyes going away to the top teams, as we know. But he's finally done it.
Yeah, although he was insisting to Gabby Logan afterwards that he'd won there before. Really doing nothing more than underline. She's like, we've checked it twice in the Santa tradition. We checked the list twice.
Fine, Gabby. We won the Emirates Cup. We won the Emirates Cup three times.
And then she got in a rear. The one you're talking about where Stephen Pienaar scored, it was actually a 2-2 draw. Just simply underlining the fact that football journalists remember footballers and football managers' careers much better than they do. But when Jim was describing the feeling of frustration and West Ham defending their own box, the thing that I couldn't get out of my head is the old epithet of the tartan Diego Simeone. I think it's, you know, it never fitted better than it did last night, because it's not like, you know, when you describe a perfect away defensive performance, you describe something that's quite chanceless, you know, where the keeper doesn't really have anything to do. And Arsenal did have their chances. And like Jim was saying, they just looked at a little bit below sharpness. They really missed Kai Havertz, which is something that you wouldn't have predicted two and a half months ago, I think it's fair to say. But it's a dangerous time for this to happen, because I think you look at it overall, Arsenal is still in a really great position. They've got a really great squad. They've spent a lot over the last couple of years. And there'll be this temptation, I think, to say, look, and everyone's already talking about it. This is a huge transfer window. This is a huge summer, winter transfer window for Arsenal, where, you know, this could be the transfer window that that wins them the league. I don't know about that. You know, you could go Newcastle and Asprilla and David Batty and just, you know, get all a bit superfluous. The main part of what Arsenal do is really good. And I think just one, not quite a freak result, but unexpected result, I suppose you could say, semi-unexpected result, in a period where you've got a shitload of fixtures and some weird results happen, I don't think you should overreact to that. Excellent as West Ham were.
Yeah, I think the issue is one of form rather than personnel, really. I mean, there are obviously injuries to factor in, but every club has that, and you have to factor that into the makeup of your squad. And there were absolutely warnings of this in the Carabao Cup when West Ham were quite comfortably the better team in quite different circumstances, but in a performance that really had echoes of what happened at the weekend. And I completely agree. It was the sort of perfect away performance from David Moyes and from West Ham defensively. They did what everybody knew they were going to do. They were compact at the back. They played with a low block. They tried to just sort of win transitions and then hit Arsenal on the break. And it's frustrating that it was very obvious that was what's going to happen. And then it just worked perfectly like that as well. Going back to the David Moyes points against the sort of bigger clubs in away games thing as well. That's one of the most frustrating things about it for me, because he's proven time and time again, particularly with the success they had in Europe last season, that he doesn't need those points. He doesn't know what to do with those points. It's like giving air miles to a fish. Yep. Like it's pointless. It's completely pointless. He doesn't need them. Yeah. We need them. Mm. We've already given them 105 million quid. They want points as well.
Yeah.
It's outrageous.
Millionaire fines, 20
ungrateful.
Quid note. Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah, it's annoying. It's funny, but you mentioned there, Jim, just to have a little pop off in a different direction for a moment. You use the term low block. I know it's one that people use a lot nowadays, and I genuinely lose no sleep and I don't get angry with football expressions changing. When did we start using low block? I always say they played deep.
It's probably last 2 or 3 years.
I think so. I mean,
these phrases
around
come and go, don't they? Do you remember for a time everyone was describing a canny bit of play as cute?
Yes.
It's becoming like a sort of epidemic.
That's right.
That seems to have shuffled along. I imagine low block is similar.
Yeah, I've no problem with it at all. And I know it's been around for a little while, but it was mentioned a couple of times as I started. And I was pondering this, and then you said, and I thought, this is my chance to ask some people who might help.
I think the main thing, Marcus, is we can all agree that West Ham are in a great moment.
They're a great moment, Andy, absolutely. But we should talk about the first goal, because there is a lot of chat around that. I mean, accusations of another conspiracy, although usually people who accuse a situation of being involved in a conspiracy are dickheads, quite frankly. So I don't think we should worry about that. But Bowen, yeah, I mean, again, obviously his leg is in the way, so the camera can't tell. It does look out, but of course you can't say it for certain.
Well, this is it, isn't it? And if you don't, I've got no problem with it, to be honest, because if you don't know, you can't guess. We don't want people guessing. You cannot build that into the way these things are judged. That's how it is. It's funny how this seems to be more of a problem this season. Like, I think since that Japan goal in the World Cup, it's almost like the ball itself has realised that it can kind of get away with one here. I swear this never happened in the history of football before that.
That goal did change everything. Suddenly everyone was like, if the ball's out and it's like you can see it's like a foot away from the line, well, the curve of the ball, it's like, no, come on. But I mean, of course, the goal at St James's Park that Arsenal conceded as well, there was chat about that. But the goal stood. I do love it when the presenter, obviously the aforementioned Gabby Logan, said to Jarrod Bowen, I mean, did you think it was out? Did you see it? You know, I understand why they're going to ask that. And of course they're going to ask that. And if I was in the same situation, I would myself. But it's just one of those questions, like, what is the guy meant to say?
Yeah. Well, Joe Willock said the ball was out, which is hilariously candid.
Yeah.
Maybe he could say yes and instigate a really boring conversation about how we need extra cameras there, even though it's something that only happens twice a season. I mean,
well, this has already started, isn't it?
Twice a season, but it's happened twice to Arsenal. Yeah. That's the problem, isn't it?
I wish Jarrod Bowen would say, yes, the ball did go out. I think there should be a replay. However, there is a conspiracy theory for me to get as many assists as possible, which will help my chances for England. And so, therefore, I'm just going to stay quiet now for the rest of my interview. And then no further questions,
perfect,
of course. So, yes, I mean, Arsenal, they were top at Christmas. It's unlikely they're going to be top at, into the new year, of course, Jim. None of that matters. It's all about being top and the final whistle of the last day of the season. They head to Craven Cottage on Sunday, of course, the cauldron that is. Jim, are you going to try and avoid Hammersmith Bridge, unlike those West Ham fans, of course, who crashed into it the other week when they went there?
I don't think I'll be travelling there by boat.
Okay, I thought you might get your dinghy on the go.
Nautical experience. You know my history with canals, so I don't think I'm going to make the step up to a river at any point.
In a little sailboat flying down the Thames. Everyone's going, there's Campbell. He's running with the wind.
I reckon.
Save him from himself.
He's covering himself in goose fat at the moment in a pair of Speedos to avoid any nautical problems.
Yeah, that's just what he gets up to, Andy.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. But there we are, each to their own. So, yes, a great win for West Ham. There's no doubt about that. Will they sign a striker in January? Who knows? But they are still, you know, they're still second in the league. I don't mean to sound patronising, but you know, it's still all to play for.
I think this is a tougher season, but if I just may say two quick things about this. As I touched upon, I think it's a form issue rather than a personnel issue, and a lot of those players aren't playing at the level you'd expect. I think Zinchenko, as I said, every player aside from Odegaard in the front line as well just have been below par recently. Zinchenko, I'm starting to sort of worry for a little bit, as he was in an odd position for the goal, which kind of led to that mix-up, and he made a couple of loose passes, and the crowd got on his back a little bit, and that can be a difficult thing at the Emirates. That hasn't happened in a while, and I would hate for that to become a thing that happens to Zinchenko, because as I said about Gabriel Jesus a little while ago, he has raised the technical level so much, and he's a high-risk, high-reward player, so he brings a hell of a lot of positivity that sometimes, you know, has that caveat to it. And secondly, just another thing on West Ham, a thing that gets forgotten about them, I think, because, you know, they don't get as much airtime as a lot of sort of traditionally, you know, what you might call bigger clubs. I think it is just worth reiterating that I do think Bobby Moore stole that bracelet. I think he's guilty as sin. I think the idea that it was a stitch up by the Colombian government is probably a bit of British exceptionalism.
Yeah, Lee, you're bringing that to the table. He's one of England's finest ever players, and he played for Fulham as well. So shove it up your bollocks. 2-0 to
afford
West
his own
Ham,
bracelets,
up
then,
yours. Should have been 3. You're lucky to get away with 2. West Ham are massive everywhere they go, apart from Craven Cottage, where they got hammered.
Really so.
And that's what's going to happen to Arsenal on Sunday.
Who are they? Who are West Ham? How are both of those results possible?
I don't know. I really don't know. But I'll just finish off the Arsenal-West Ham chat with this. West Ham are 9 points off the top.
Oh, are they on the verge?
You can't argue with stats. Brighton 4, Tottenham Hotspur 2. What a mad game down on the south coast. Tottenham almost fought their way back into this game, having been 4-0 down. They were going to be absolutely hammered. Then they scored a couple of late goals. Then they created loads of chances. They hit the post. All sorts was going on. And because there was about, I don't know, half an hour of injury time, they genuinely were still in the game. Although... Yeah. You know, as it would turn out, they would obviously go down 4-2. But a mad end to the match, Jim.
Yeah, I think it's symptomatic of this type of time of year, isn't it? Where there's a lot of football in the legs of players, and obviously Spurs in particular are absolutely decimated by injuries, so that they're probably running on empty a little bit at this point. And it does lead to these quite mad contests that are very frenetic and a little bit ragged. But yeah, again, I said recently we're not entirely sure who Spurs are, and I think I kind of misrepresented what I said by that, because you and Luke were both quite clear on who they are, and obviously that refers to their attacking philosophy. But I think what I mean by that is it's very hard to know like exactly what their level is, because they lose games you don't expect to, then they absolutely batter someone. They want in that brilliant run of form at the start of the season. And again, obviously, personnel issues are relevant here, but they're fascinating to watch at the moment, because you don't quite know what you're going to get from them. You feel like even they don't really know what they're going to get from them within games. And it was a fantastic contest, this. And obviously, Pervis Estupiñan, possibly the player with the most satisfying name to say in the Premier League, with... surely a contend for goal of the season, just because of the delightful bend on it. I mean, that's one of those things that you have to take your hat off, don't you, to that?
Yeah, you do.
But I think it's easy to look at this game and say, you know, the ending's slightly anachronistic because you know that they were getting absolutely panelled. It was a 4-0 game, etc., etc. By the way, Spurs were still creating chances when Brighton were absolutely panelling them. So, which I think is worth pointing out. But it's not really. This is, I think, because we try to frame things around, the biggest personalities in the game and the biggest clubs in the game. You know, I think people can look at De Zerbi and go, well, we know the sort of philosophy that he comes from. You know, look at, you know, how he's built his career on, say, Guardiola, for example. But he's not. He's him. De Zerbi is De Zerbi. And what De Zerbi is nothing if not extraordinarily reckless. And that's what this game was. You know, even when they were playing really well, and they were so much better than Spurs, that's right to say. And maybe in that sense, the score was a little bit flattering. But I think the score is fair in the fact that it reflects the fact that his teams play like he doesn't give a shit. And I don't know how, like, if you're talking about, and obviously, like, Paul Barber at Brighton has been asked about this recently, like, you know, there are a lot of people interested in De Zerbi, and he said, well, clearly we've got a plan for if that happens because we know what size of club we are, etc., etc., etc. It's a little bit like Pochettino at Spurs, I think. It's almost the perfect fit. Now, I would hope that would be why De Zerbi wouldn't rush to leave Brighton, because this risk embracing attitude that he has and has always had, it's fine at Sassuolo, it's fine at Brighton. Is it fine if you're the coach of Arsenal or Chelsea? Like, probably not, to be honest. So just, I reckon he should lap it up for as long as possible, and we should lap it up for as long as possible. I guess the thing is, because Brighton have been so inconsistent in their first ever European season, you didn't expect a performance quite of this quality. And they were brilliant. They really deserve this.
I know what you mean by De Zerbi being a perfect fit for Brighton, and you want him to stay there as long as possible. We see this, don't we? And it's totally understandable from someone like De Zerbi, and there's lots of other examples where they're at a club, we enjoy them being there, maybe a bit of inertia sets in, or even actually the performances of the team may sort of come and go, because it's hard to keep it at that kind of level with a limited budget and, you know, the size of some of the Premier League clubs around you. But you think, no, don't go to a bigger job. But of course, if he's doing really, really well, it's natural for Potter to go somewhere bigger. Or like, dare I even say Sam Allardyce, you know, when he was at Bolton, you know, did he achieve everything he could have done at Bolton? Yeah, probably, you know, great time there. And then he tries his hand, and you can totally understand why someone would try his hand. Like if a club came in for De Zerbi. And then they go, and then it's just never sort of quite the same, and it takes a while for them to find another home sort of similar to that. So yeah, I hope he stays there for as long as possible, but I totally understand it if a big side comes in, a bigger side comes in rather. But for the moment, though, he is very much a Brighton man, and Brighton, not only are they producing some great football, of course, they're producing some great talent. Jack Hinshelwood's performance and goal showed again what they're doing down there. Just 18 years old, obviously. I got a few tweets saying, get him on the plane. They're all welcome, those kind of comments. Thank you very much. Don't worry, I'm thinking the same as you. But he looks a great player. He's got a great name, and he's from a family, Jim, who have got a real history in the game. You've got some former Brighton players in his family, and maybe one or two Palace ones as well.
Wow. So this is quite a sort of Shakespearean situation developing in front of our eyes.
Yeah, let's hope it doesn't turn Macbeth. I don't know how that would play out in a footballing context, but my goodness, I'd perish the thought, quite frankly. But yeah, he looks a player. Going back to Spurs, though, we should point out that since the start of November, they've conceded 19 goals, the joint most in the entire league. Now, I understand you won't be concerned about that, Jim, being an Arsenal fan, but it is an issue for Spurs. You know, we've loved the attacking philosophy of Postecoglou since he's been there. But realistically, if we're all honest with ourselves, that start was very much a honeymoon period, and we thought, as you say, how's it going to settle down? What are they about? And it appears to be that they're in a little bit of a rut, although rut might be too strong a word. I mean, they still are fifth, for crying out loud. I mean, they're only, you know, 1 point off Man City, although Man City have a game in hand.
I suppose fifth is the ideal rut, isn't it, given the uncertainty about the coefficient. I mean, it might be good. It might be a nice little place to nestle.
Yeah,
I guess the other thing is, though, when Jim was talking about it being form rather than personnel for Arsenal, it's the opposite for Spurs. I mean, you look at the defence they're going into games with. It's really difficult, and they've had their problems in terms of midfield personnel. Of course, Bissouma's been much more involved, but you want him to actually stay on the pitch. You know, Bentancur came back and then was set back by injury for a little bit. The fact that, you know, Romero is what he is in terms of suspensions. Van der Ven's been missing. So they kind of rebuilt the defence and then lost the cornerstones of it. You know, I always think we sort of slightly falsely judge goalkeepers when, especially when we look at the best teams. And I think when you look at Vicario over the last couple of months, you look, oh, he's been great, hasn't he? He's been great because he's had to make loads of saves. Yeah. And that really underlines the problems they have. You know, we've talked about, do Arsenal need to buy a striker? You know, that's a question you could have a separate pod on in January. Whereas the question of, do Spurs need to buy an extra defender or two? That's a voice note. You know, we know exactly what they need to do in January.
Gentlemen, Spurs play Bournemouth, of course, on Sunday, who are the form team in the league. So it won't be an easy one for Tottenham, you have to say. Son Heung-min, it'll be his last game before heading to the Asian Cup in Qatar. He will come back, of course, but his last game before he goes there with Jurgen Klinsmann. Nice to see those two team up again.
Yeah, although it seems to me quite negligent that one of the Premier League's best players now has to go and be managed by Jurgen Klinsmann. Something about that just doesn't seem right.
From one Tottenham man to the other. Nice to see Qatar hosting another football tournament again, Jim.
Yep. FIFA said they wanted to bring football to the world. Yep. Clearly, it's taken off as an idea. The plucky little sport that could. Uh-huh. And we've got egg on our faces, haven't we?
We have.
We all thought the whole thing was a shit idea. But yeah. Now look.
I know, eh? Egg on our liberal faces. I tell you something.
Woke yolk all over our chops.
Now, how about this? Trevor Sinclair, he of the overhead kick, is going to be involved in the Asian Cup this year, Andy Brassel. He was a last-minute addition to the Indian national team's coaching staff. Get on that!
I suspect we will be stunned by some of the personnel on the touchline. And that's if we, that's if we don't get past Jurgen Klinsmann, because when you were saying before how Son is going off with Klinsmann for January, it's...
It's a way to word it, Andy.
Yeah, it feels like I don't want to go. I just have to go.
Yeah,
yeah.
Sad New Year. Obviously he loves playing for his country, etc., etc. But yeah, will Klinsmann be there? Imagine that if he became the first manager to do a tournament over Zoom. He's the man to do it for me. But I love the fact Trevor Sinclair's involved. A man whom I met once. We took to the stage. Andy, how about this for a cocktail? Took to the stage with Trevor Sinclair and Brandon Block, DJ Brandon Block, after England versus Germany in the Euros. We were hosting a venue and we didn't get a word out because the England fans were so delighted. They were sort of in celebration, kind of tearing the place apart. We smiled, looked at each other, and Brandon Block looked at me and went, "Our work here is done." And off we went. Ladies and gentlemen, that happened, I promise you. Oh dear.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, what a day it was. Perhaps I'll maybe elaborate on Ramble Uncut one day.
I think the three of you should work together more often if it's that effective.
Yeah, true enough.
He didn't even have to drop a beat.
Yeah.
I always thought Hoddle and Waddle needed a DJ to bring them into the 21st century.
Yes, Andy. You see.
Is there a chance that Trevor Sinclair is an overhead kick coach? We now see things, they're very, very specialised, aren't we?
Why not?
Yeah. Aren't they? We see like throw-in coaches and things like that. Perhaps... are India just going to try overhead kicks over and over again? It might be really entertaining.
If they do, then you know what's going on there. They will become the most popular international side if that's their move. And they're like Garnachoing it into the corner and so on. It would be quite something. So all eyes on them, everybody. Now, we've got the mailbag coming at you tomorrow morning. But on Monday, we have a special New Year's ramble just for you. Myself, Luke, Vish and Jim shared our New Year's resolutions for football in 2024 and heard plenty of yours too. Here's a little taste of what to expect.
One fancy dress day of the season and you have to come in fancy dress.
Right.
Right. And wouldn't it be hilarious, I don't know, like
Liverpool v Man United at Anfield, right? A big highly charged game like that. Klopp dressed as, I don't know, Santa, and Ten Hag, you know, dressed as
when Steve Cooper,
and they have to shake hands at the end of the game, or they're pissed off with each other.
When Steve Cooper gets up after a defeat at home, and he knows he's going to be sacked.
Yeah,
he's wearing the David Brent thing with the yeah. bird's legs.
Yeah, exactly.
And a little thing on the top.
You're sacked.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. How's this for an idea on that note as
yeah,
well?
Build it, Jim. Build
but,
it.
One day a year comes out of a hat. Today, here's Sean Dyche, but dressed by Jurgen Klopp.
Oh, you get to dress each other.
Like okay, that. And that's the third round. So
Sean Dyche is a big inflatable cock and ball. Like he's a stag weekend.
If you like the sound of that, and why the bloody Nora wouldn't you like the sound of Sean Dyche dressed as a massive cock and balls, then catch that on Monday. And of course, the ramble will resume as normal on the Tuesday, where you can win a telly. All right, let's have a quick break.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
League One, Stevenage against Northampton Town. Mark Webber.
He's Elliot List. His goal made it thrice. Reed in 2 minutes, then a Roberts delight. Stevenage lead Northampton 3-0.
There's been a late goal in League...
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. That was the BBC summariser on Football Focus on Boxing Day there. My goodness, Jim, makes you proud to be alive, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Yeah. Now, everybody, little callback here to Wednesday's show. We mentioned on Wednesday, or specifically I did, that Modern Future beat Pyramids in the Egyptian Super Cup on penalties. Well, little bit more info for you around all that crap. The manager of Modern Future is Ricardo Fomoschino, one of Jose Mourinho's former assistants.
Get everywhere.
Yeah, well, I love this because Mr. Mourinho called him in the middle of his press conference after the win and he answered the phone. Oh, hello, Jose Mourinho. Come to congratulate me, have you? No, I've got a job, thanks. Andy, he's Portuguese. Do you know him?
Former senior, yeah, a little bit, but I think it was interesting how he answered it. Very as it was actually, as you said, he was like, "Oh, hi, boss. You'll have to excuse me taking this. Would all of you like to say hello to Jose Mourinho?" And like,
yeah, brilliant. It's so good.
Held the phone up to the little room. Magnificent. Yeah.
My favourite thing about it is that this happened on Christmas Day.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, presumably this is part of some sort of mind game that Jose Mourinho was playing with his kids. I'm just going to go and communicate with someone I actually want to speak to. Someone who's actually achieved something. You keep stuffing your faces and have a little think about that, yeah?
Yeah, I didn't think of it like that, of course. Oh, dear. Well, Andy, when I said, do you know him? You went, yeah, a little bit. Does that mean you've just been to dinner with him once?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Okay, okay. I know how you operate, you naughty little sausage. Now, how about this? Ali L commented on our YouTube video of this, and he said, I love how he starts this clip. He's straight into it. Egyptian here. I heard the call and I've come running. And he went on to say, Egypt is an absolute goldmine of interesting club names. There's National Bank, Ceramica Cleopatra, and Grand Hotel, and many, many more. I love it. Modern Future used to be called Coca-Cola FC, by the way.
Yeah.
That was when they used to also own Colin Kazim Richards, I think.
Yes,
they?
I was going to say the Colin Kazim Richards of football teams. Modern Future is a brilliant name, isn't it? They sound like an indie band, maybe like an indie label, even.
Yeah but the fact that they were playing Pyramids was a lovely one as well.
Yes. There's one called El Guna, which obviously is very specialised towards me, but I do like.
Yes. But I mean, as we say, you know, Africa in general have got some wonderful football names. Yeah. And Europe, again, could learn, but it's unlikely we're going to change any of the names unless Red Bull come in. Let's be honest.
Yeah, Barbados still has my favourite team name, which is Insurance Management Bears. Really, there's a real twist at the end of that, isn't there?
Yeah, they're not very... Oh, well, they are. Anyway, back to the Premier League, everybody. Manchester City versus Sheffield United on Saturday at 3 o'clock. Manchester City have a chance to go level with Arsenal. They've missed a little bit of football in the Premier League due to the Club World Cup. They've not had a great time this season, and yet they will almost certainly win this game of football and be level with your beloved Arsenal, Jim
Campbell. They probably will. The plucky underdogs are on the charge again.
They are.
Sheffield United are in dire, dire straits at the moment, aren't they? It was interesting seeing Chris Wilder's comments about how it wasn't down to bad luck that they conceded those two own goals. He seemed absolutely furious. And I think he's, I guess, the one hope you might have for anybody who would like to see City drop points, such as myself, is that maybe Chris Wilder can just put a number of rockets into a number of anuses and inspire
of the Man City players, presumably. And it just massively puts them off, I suppose.
Well, they're going to have to grind, aren't they? They're going to have to really, really grind to get something here, but you would expect City to just have an absolute carnival.
Well, a bit really, of bump and grind, Andy.
What they really need is to take their lead, Sheffield United, from, I guess, the ultimate Manchester City versus Sheffield United clash, because it was in this game at Main Road, probably about 30 years ago, that Vinnie Jones got the quickest booking in top flight history. He put in a late tackle on the centre circle at kickoff. Obviously, got
still late. Amazing. Yeah, that's quite impressive, isn't it?
He got a second one to complement it later. When Sheffield United had that lime green strip. And I think if they can lead like that, at least they'll leave an impression.
An impression indeed. Well, Manchester City, of course, were back to winning ways when they beat Everton 3-1 at Goodison Park. Pep Guardiola has said his players have the hunger to retain the title in their bones, Andy Brassel. In their bones.
And they were really good in a game which, you know, as Luke was saying the other day, you know, they've not lost, City haven't lost to Everton for a bit, but you still have the memory of all those games where City couldn't get a point at Goodison Park. And the fact that Everton have been in great nick since the point deduction. But I think, like, when they conceded the goal, they just didn't let it change anything about the way they were playing. And I think that was the thing. They almost just ignored it. You know, they didn't react to it in any way. You know, you think, you know, goals cause reactions. I don't think it did in the case of Manchester City. They kept on playing as well as they were before. They didn't really miss Haaland, which is good because he's going to be out for a few more weeks. And they were just excellent. Again, really, it feels... Mm. We talked about the idea of the Club World Cup being a sort of, well, Vish talked about it being a holiday for them, and we talked about it at least being a like mental break from the Premier League, and it felt that this felt proper old City. And I do think like some of the results in the first part of the season for City have been a little bit misleading, but they do feel ready to give it both barrels again, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, it did seem like a holiday for the majority of Manchester City and their players and staff and so on. Although not Kyle Walker, who got in a bit of a scrap, of course, with Felipe Melo.
Why isn't that Prince on holiday?
That a lot lately.
Yeah, perhaps. Well, he also needed to be restrained by Pep Guardiola and co. when he tried to have a go at Everton assistant Ian Wone. And there was a bit of pushing and shoving and so on. So Kyle Walker seems quite angry these days, Jim.
He does. And maybe that's how he keeps up his pace. It's like a sort of energy bar.
Is it just rage?
Like a certain level of rage.
Is that or the rocket that Chris Wilde has given to him? One of the two.
Jason Imagine Statham that. Will play him in the movie one day.
Yes. I could see that. Phil Foden, of course, impressed against Everton. Did you see Gianni Infantino recently singled out Phil in an Instagram story saying that he is proof that youth competitions progress players' careers? Now, whether Infantino's right or wrong, and I know that he is ultimately right now the king of football, sadly, you don't want to be singled out by him at
Poor
any
Phil.
Point.
Poor Not Phil.
Not even for praise. It makes it sound like you are complicit with all this nonsense, isn't it? Like you're the poster boy for what his vision of what football should be, which is clearly like deranged and horrible and evil.
I mean, what an extraordinary thing to claim when it's obvious that he's the ultimate Guardiola product. If you're Pep Guardiola, maybe you don't give a shit what Gianni Infantino thinks, but you're definitely sitting there thinking, what? What?
Infantino is the ultimate bald fraud, let's be honest.
Absolutely, completely. But Foden's come from a really sort of really good academy, coached by Guardiola. This is you're completely right. It's just a nonsense thing to claim. His goal against Everton, special sauce that. Can I just bring it back to them saying that they've got that winning feeling in their bones or whatever it was? Mm. Does that not sound like an admission of doping to you? That needs to be investigated.
There it is, everybody. Let us move on very swiftly to Crystal Palace versus Brentford, Saturday at 3 p.m. Now, Roy Hodgson was seen spitting on the floor in disgust after Palace conceded a late penalty to lose at Stamford Bridge on Wednesday. What a contrast to the previous emotion.
Well, much like the whole thing where it looked like he was laughing at Guardiola, but he was just laughing at something else and it looked like that on the camera. With this, he was actually spitting out the skull of a little mouse. That he
I love it. Does it not suggest that he was laughing at Guardiola? Because he conceded a penalty and that was his reaction. If he also laughed in that moment, we would kind of go, oh, he's got some weird thing where if a penalty is awarded, it like his sort of Pavlovian response is to laugh for some reason. Whereas, no. The two emotions that he possibly displayed were correct. Do you know what I mean? Like the context and everything suggests that that's what it was. But I tell you what, though, you don't want to be in Ray's sphere. Roy's sphere, or Ray also, Andy, when he's angry, because we know he can be quite the tough guy.
Yeah, I suppose so. I think it was more the manner rather than any sense of injustice that he's felt recently. Because Palace were quite close to nicking what, let's be honest, would have been an undeserved point. And, you know, they just couldn't quite get it over the line. But I mean, this was kind of Chelsea in a nutshell. This was good Chelsea. I thought they were really good for large parts of this. And Mihailo Mudrik is looking in great nick at the moment, which is obviously good for them. But they're doing that thing where they manage to pass up so many chances to put the game away, which they've done at even their best parts of the season. When they've been playing well, Chelsea have sort of found a way to not make that dominance count on paper, and they almost sort of did the ultimate expression of that. I feel like Palace are still in quite a bad place at the moment.
Yeah, Palace are not pulling up any trees, it's fair to say. They're 15th, you know, just to take their last six Premier League games, three draws, three losses. It's not great. There are links, or there are rumours, should I say, linking Steve Cooper to the job. Andy, what do you make of that? I mean, I would say it's probably unlikely that Hodgson would get the sack, but you never know in the Premier League. Managerial merry-go-round.
If it gets a little bit worse, I think they will.
Oh, that would be sad.
It would, but I don't think he's immune from that at all, Marcus. I really don't. Just, even with his history there, but it's, the slide is pretty bad, isn't it? And essentially, you've got, you know, Everton are going to motor away. Luton look like they've got something about them. Forest have got a new manager. They are in real danger of getting sucked into that.
I mean, it's the Luton thing, Jim, that's putting pressure on both of these teams, on both of Palace or Brentford. I think there are, you know, there are moments for both of them. I think they're in a fairly similar position in the Premier League, even though the clubs are in a slightly different space. In that, neither of them are ever going to qualify for Europe, and you feel in most seasons they're probably not in danger of going down either, which is this really weird netherworld to inhabit. And maybe Palace are grateful of the company having Brentford there next to them now. Who knows? But I think there's always this little bit where, and Brentford are in it at the moment as well, where you have a little bad run and it starts to creak. And I would have to say, when you look at the players that are available to Palace, and especially the fact that Elise is back in the team and in absolutely brilliant form. I mean, we talked about what would have been an undeserved draw. The goal that Elise scored definitely would have deserved to take a point. That was a brilliant goal.
Yeah,
and really, really indicative of the level of quality that he's got. But I guess when you have got that sort of quality, you look at him, you look at Eze, it's really difficult to justify like their lack of progress, I suppose, even though the end of last season was really heady. So if you were talking about these teams being in a sort of similar sort of position, I would say in terms of the managers, Thomas Frank is, despite the history that Hodgson has got with Palace, Thomas Frank is on safer ground.
Four defeats on the spin
at the moment,
and Luton are 4 points off them.
Yeah, I'm not talking about the results. I'm talking about where they are at the moment. Now, look, Brentford have got a load to deal with because, you know, they've got the injury to Mbeumo. They've got players going off to African Cup of Nations.
Being one of them.
Yeah, they're going to need a busy January, even with Ivan Toney coming back, presuming they don't sell him. I think the position they are, actually, there's been a lot of speculation linking in with Arsenal, obviously. They can't sell him at the moment, can they? I mean, they're not in a position. If they'd have got, say, I don't know, 7 points out of those last four games rather than none, maybe that would be a different discussion. But where Brentford are at the moment, I don't think they can afford to sell Toney, can they?
It'd be interesting when he comes back for obvious reasons. But yeah, even on that note as well. I don't think Thomas Frank's in danger of losing his job unless they have an absolute disaster. And with regards to Roy, well, if it was going to happen, I would hope that he flies from the nest before he's pushed, quite frankly. So there we are. Right then, chaps, it's time for the Football Ramble ACCA with Betfair. With Betfair this season, you can build your football accumulators with their 90-minute payout, where all winning selections will be paid out at 90 minutes on their match odds 90 markets, regardless of what happens in added time. So today and every Friday, we're building an ACCA of four match odds 90 bets from across the Premier League. All three of us got our picks wrong last Friday, so we're hoping to bounce back. Andy, you're up first.
I'm going for Brentford to win at Crystal Palace. Both of these are way out of form at the moment. But I think with Brentford, they couldn't actually play worse than they... Or they couldn't actually defend worse, I think, more accurately than they defended against Wolves. So maybe that's the kick up the backside that they need to go and get a result at Selhurst Park.
Jim, what have you got?
I've gone for Aston Villa to beat Burnley at home. Now, this may seem like a really easy pick, but in my last couple of picks, someone has got sent off and absolutely ruined any chance of having been right. So I'm trying to go for a bit of a banker here. And I think Villa at home against Burnley, especially after they drop points against Sheffield United, will be keen to just get that buried nice and quickly.
Yes, indeed. Luke Moore has our third pick, and he had this to say.
I absolutely loved the front four of Nottingham Forest against Newcastle United last time out. As a result, I think they're going to do the business over one step forward, one step back, Manchester United at the City Ground. So my pick is Nottingham Forest to beat Manchester United. I think they can do it, possibly under the lights, possibly not. I can't remember what time the kickoff is, but it gets dark early this time of year. So let's say the lights are going to be on anyway. The lights are important. Do it for the lights, all of the lights, Nottingham Forest to beat Man United. That's it. And a partridge in a pear tree.
And he has a go at you for leaving long voice notes, Andy, when you're not in the studio. Thank you, Luke. And I'm going for a draw between Wolves and Everton. So there we are. Brentford to beat Palace, Villa to beat Burnley, Forest to beat Manchester United, and Wolves and Everton to draw. A £10 bet with Betfair on that returns £310.31. And if we win, all that money will go to Prostate Cancer UK. Plus, for every stoppage time goal in the Premier League this weekend, Betfair will donate £10 to Prostate Cancer UK. We've already raised £450 this season alone from that. Remember, with Betfair this season, when you place a bet on their match odds 90 markets, your winning bet will be paid out in full at 90 minutes. Any bets that are winning at 90 minutes but are then undone by some stoppage time drama won't be affected, and that's the same for our Ramble Acca every week. Exclusive to Betfair Sportsbook, T's and C's apply. You've got to be over 18 to get involved, and for more information on responsible gambling, head to begambleaware.org.
Dean Smith also says you're an encyclopedia of football.
A what?
An encyclopedia of football.
I don't know what that means.
Yes, it's Jack's Encyclopedia. And for the last one of the year, it's a big title bout. Because, of course, Jim won last week to take the lineal belt from Marcus. Is he going to take it back? We're going to find out.
I hope so.
Oi! Right, that's minus one for you already. It's a simple game of categories, everyone. If you go too slow, I'll play Gary Neville's Orgasm, of course, which will leave you 7 seconds to answer. You know the drill. I really love the first category here. I wanted to ask you, actually, are you going to Fulham Arsenal together on Sunday?
That is the plan, as far as I understand it. He may have mugged me off. Yeah. Between now and then, as some sort of mind game.
I think we'll see how the next little while goes. Oh, well, no, obviously, that will affect the conversation on Sunday, certainly. Your question one is...
Surely I'm up first, because Jim's the belt holder.
I haven't even asked the category yet. For that, yeah. Jim goes first. Players that have signed for both Arsenal and Fulham since 1990. So that's signed for the two of them. They don't necessarily have to have made an appearance. There are 16 players...
So, as in signed between the clubs?
Signed for both Fulham and Arsenal. They don't have to have directly gone between those two clubs.
Okay.
If I could play the 7 seconds now, I'd do it, but my finger won't reach that far. I'm going to make it across to the button once I've asked Jim to give his first answer. 16 possible answers. He played for both Arsenal and Fulham since 1990. Jim Campbell.
I'm going to go for an obvious one, Willian.
Ooh.
Yes.
Bernd Leno.
Yes.
Cedric Suarez.
Nice.
Very good.
Luis Baramorte.
Sing Sing.
Philippe Senderos.
Ah.
Excellent. That's a good one.
Love that. What's his name? Callum Chambers.
Very good.
Oh, that's a good one.
Spells with a chance to steal and go 1-0 up. There's one I cannot believe you're not getting here.
Yeah, I know.
It's Torres to give Chelsea a place in the Champions League final. The headline has been written.
Oh, so near but so far.
Here we go again. I can't believe this. This is a shocker.
So yes. We've got one more go each. Flipping gents, this is, we're going to start with Jim. Back to Jim.
Ian Wright.
So close, Jim. I think that was a sensible punt because, of course, he has played for a lot of clubs, Ian Wright. Fulham is not one of them.
Yeah, I know that.
Back to you, Marcus C. Speller. Please help me out here.
Andy, I'm so sorry.
I dread you getting this wrong.
Okay, I'm getting it wrong, Andy.
It's Torres to give Chelsea a place in the Champions League final. The headline has been written.
You see, I did something that was very bad, actually, there. Because this is the final Jack's Encyclopedia of the year, and I want to see a winner. I don't know if the listeners feel the same. I said you're going to dread getting this wrong. Alex Iwobi!
Oh, Bennett.
The other ones you could have had were Andy Cole, Emmanuel Frimpong, Charlie Hartfield, Julian Gray, Junichi Inamoto, Mika Biret, Hui Font, the lesser known Font brother, Stephen Hughes, or Thomas Eisfeldt.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, Iwobi's the one, isn't it? It's so annoying because when somebody says somebody from another era, you kind of go, oh, I'll check that era in my head.
Yeah.
And then you kind of go, oh, and you're going between eras, and it's like, and then your brain just goes, stop it, nothing's coming through now.
Yes, it's true.
And then everybody looks silly.
Everybody loses.
Well, look, as we always say, when we've conceded a goal in five sides, still 0-0, lads, still 0-0.
Yeah.
So category two, and Spells, you will be starting teams that have been top of the Premier League at Christmas. There are 11 of these. Perhaps that's a surprise to you. Perhaps it's not. Can you lead us out the gate, please? Marcus Christopher Speller.
Arsenal.
Correct.
Man City.
Let me see. Yes, it's correct.
Manchester United.
Yes.
Chelsea.
Yes.
Liverpool, surely.
Oh, I'm really enjoying the pace to this one. It's back to you, Jim. Very good.
Leicester City.
Yes. Ooh. Good.
Newcastle United.
Oh, twice, yes.
Kevin Keegan's Newcastle United. Blackburn Rovers?
Yes.
Like it. Aston Villa.
He's cooking with gas.
Ooh, okay.
Jim, to stay in it.
Now it gets tough, doesn't it? How many left, Andy?
Two. Stalling, Andy. Stalling.
Two. Who started the season like a runaway freight train and only to drive off a cliff?
Oh, Jim, so close. Marcus is the winner of that category. The two you missed out were Leeds United. Norwich, 1993.
Yeah. Norwich.
Yes. Villa should have twigged, maybe think of Norwich.
Yeah, Jeremy Goss is giving you a big thumbs up at the moment, Marcus. So we go to category three, where Marcus can take back his lineal belt. If.
Should have had it with Alex Iwobi. Should be on my belt now, Andy.
So should I have, though, to be fair.
Anyway, category three is English managers that have won a major domestic trophy in the Premier League era. So that's one of the Premier League, the FA Cup, or the League Cup since the 92-93 season.
Do we even have more than two answers?
I can't believe there are a whole six.
A whole six. Premier League era.
They've won a major domestic league trophy in the Premier League era. So that's since 92-93 started. And it's got to be one of the Premier League, the FA Cup, or the League Cup. Jim Campbell, give me one.
Jesus Christ.
Is that an answer? Definitely not English, Jim.
Paul Clement?
What is that about? Oh my goodness.
That is not correct.
With Swansea, did he not?
I've got my finger hovering over the button, Marcus.
Do you know what? I'm going to win it. I mean, there's a number of opportunities. But as he managed England before, I'm going to go for Steve McLaren.
Marcus Speller wins!
Yes, he's got
Andy, I'm going to do four of the remaining five, if I may.
This is what you're up against.
Go on.
It's my Christmas Merineum as well. So he could have had Harry Redknapp.
Yes.
Could have had Joe Royal.
Yes.
Could have had Ron Atkinson.
Yes.
And who was the other one I had?
Allardyce, surely.
League Cup. Not Allardyce.
Did they not win a League Cup?
They
lost that final, didn't they?
I mean, it's clear the League Cup's doing a lot of heavy lifting here. Let me put you out of your misery. Roy Evans, League Cup in 1995. And the following year, the League Cup was won by Brian Little and Aston Villa.
Yeah. Right. Funnily enough, Roy Evans was the one I didn't actually have, who perhaps was the most obvious one, managing Liverpool.
Yeah, but now Andy's read them out. You've got them all.
Yeah, well done.
There you go. There's your belt. Don't put it on before you take the keys out.
No, of course, Andy, and I appreciate you saying that as well, because that would be negligent of me. So
can't believe I wasted a whole piece of paper for this.
Well, funnily enough, actually, on the mailbag tomorrow, English managers are under the spotlight. So do tune in for that on your podcast tuner. But thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble preview show, sponsored by Betfair, part of the Acast Creator Network. Of course, do follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, and perhaps will be known as Twitter again one day. TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram at Football Ramble. And don't forget to subscribe on your podcast app. I would say the keys are in the lock, but of course, the gate's been open for quite a long time, and it continues to be, of course, so don't abuse that, everybody. Thanks very much for listening. We do appreciate it. Laura Love, thank you very much, Jim Campbell.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andy Brassel.
Thank you.
And thank you, Steve McLaren. See you tomorrow for the mailbag.
Ramblers, and happy holidays. As Marcus mentioned earlier in the show, we are giving away no less than 3 50-inch Toshiba Fire QLED TVs. To enter the prize draw, just enter lnk.to/ramble competition into your web browser. That is lnk.to/ramble competition. Then pop in your email address and you are done. Plus, if you sign up to the Football Ramble Patreon, you will be entered twice. And we all love being entered twice. Well, and please note that only UK listeners are eligible to enter. We'll announce the first winner on Tuesday, January the 2nd. A very good luck to you.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.